హరే కృష్ణ. సార్థ్యమర్జున స్యాదౌ కూర్వన్ గీతామృతం దదౌ లోకత్రయోపకారాయ తస్మై కృష్ణాత్మనే నమః. హరే కృష్ణ. సో టుడే వి కంటిన్యూ విత్ ది ఫస్ట్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ ది భగవద్గీత. వి డిస్కస్ టిల్ వర్సెస్ వర్స్ 14 యెస్టర్డే. సో ఫస్ట్ దుర్యోధన స్పోక్ అసెసింగ్ ద స్ట్రెంగ్త్స్ ఆఫ్ బోత్ ద ఆర్మీస్ అండ్ భీష్మ బ్లూ ఇస్ కాన్షియస్ remaining Kauravas blew their conch shell, and now Krishna and Arjuna, the focus is on them and they are blowing their conch shell. So let us look at the verse. Let's see here. Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjaya Paundram Dadmo Mahashankham Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha. So, both of them have blown their conches. Panchajanyam Rishikesho. Lord Rishikesh blew his Panchajanya, his conch shell. And Dhananjaya is Krishna, is Arjuna. And he blew his conch shell named Devadatta. And similarly, Paundram Dadmau Mahashankham. So, the giant Shankha, Mahashankha. You know, Bhima himself was giant-bodied. His strength was like that of a giant, and his paraphernalia was also like that of a giant. So, Mahashankha, his conch shell was giant. So, Paundram Dadmau, and his name was Paundra. Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha. So, Bhima, the name itself means like Hercules, one who is extremely strong. So, in English there is a word called Herculean. So, Hercules is a character from the Greek tradition, Greco-Roman tradition, and there the idea is of a person who had giant strength and he could do a huge amount of work. So many of the characters in the Greco-Roman tradition, they are derivatives from the Vedic tradition. And in fact, if we look at the thoughts of Socrates, when Socrates' friend's wife passes away and his brother is lamenting, Socrates consoles him by giving 5 reasons for the immortality of the soul. And those reasons are practically identical with the first chapter, with the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is telling Arjuna about the immortality of the soul. So, basically after the Kurukshetra war, from the Indian mainland, there were expatriates which went away, people who left the country, and they went to various parts, settled down in various parts. And they were settled in various parts, but over the centuries, as the power of the Kurukshetra king, power of the king of Hastinapur became weaker and weaker, the connection with the parent culture became more tenuous, and then some local cultural derivatives also came up. That's why there are similarities between the Vedic culture and the other cultures of the world, and there are differences also. So the Vedic patriarchs consider the Greco-Roman culture to be a expatriate Vedic civilization. Srila Prabhupada talks about this, and it's mentioned in Lilamrit also. So, Bhima Karma. So, his name is Bhima, but Karma was also Bhima. And here he's referred to not by the name Bhima, he's referred to by another name, Vrikodaraha. Udara means stomach. And then Udara, Vrika is giant, huge. So, Vrikodaraha refers to, as Prabhupada says, the voracious eater. So, voracious eater. You know, Bhima, he was extremely powerful. And now power doesn't come out of thin air. You know, a person who does a lot of powerful work gets that power by eating. So after Draupadi Swayambar was performed, in which Arjuna won her hand, and then they came back. And when they came back, then Arjuna told his mother Kunti, was waiting anxiously. He says, I have got a special gift for you. So he says, so Kunti, she was doing her prayers. And without looking, he says, whatever you have got, share it with your brothers. And take it. So he was shocked. He didn't know what to do. All of them were stunned. And seeing the numbed silence, sensing the numbed silence behind her, Kunti turned and asked, what is the matter? And then she saw Draupadi, you know, princess dressed in the royal robes of for the occasion of marriage. He said, I got a bride for you. I got a wife. They were all shocked. Then Kunti said that, you know, my words have never been false. And Yudhishthira also started thinking about it. And then he said, I never contemplated a sinful activity, but and still I feel that what you have said should be done. And then afterward, there's a long story. Vyasadeva also came there. And Vyasadeva also said, actually, Draupadi had performed austerity in her previous life and she was desperate for a husband. So when Lord Shiva appeared, she asked Lord Shiva, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband. She said 5 times. Lord Shiva said, because you ask 5 times, you'll get 5 husbands. Next life. And then Draupadi was also convinced. And then basically the marriage with all the 5 was done. But the important point for our context is, so when Draupadi had come there, then Kunti trained Draupadi. You know, how now you should serve your husband. So how should you serve them? How serve the Pandavas? He says, whatever food we get, you know, you divide into 2 parts. And take 1 part and then divide into 5. We were dividing into 5 parts. Now we'll divide into 6 parts. So 1 part for each of the 4 Pandavas, 1 part for you and 1 part for me. And so like that. And the one giant part, which is half part, that is for Bhima. So Draupadi could restrain her swine. So that is how actually Bhima was Bhima Karma Vrukodara. He used to eat a lot. And his appetite was giant, but then work he do was tremendous also. When the Kauravas would be when the Kauravas had conspired to have the Pandavas burned in Varanavarta in the house of Lakh. So at night through a tunnel on before the house was burnt, the Pandavas escaped. Now when they came into the forest, the wilderness, they were making their way alone. Well, the 5 of them were there, the 6 of them were there along with their mother, the 5 Pandavas. They were just making their struggling along. So at that time they became exhausted. So what did Bhima do? Bhima said, all of you sit on my shoulders. So he took his 4 brothers as well as mother, he got all of them to sit on his shoulders. And he started running. Oh, actually the others were stumbling on branches and other things. When he was running, whatever was there, it would just break apart and he would keep running. So when it came to work also, he did tremendous work. So he was very, very energetic. So different people, depending on their capacity, depending on their nature, their body type, their kind of work, different people may eat different amounts of food. Sometimes if we are eating less and somebody is eating more, we shouldn't think that I am more sense controlled, that person is less sense controlled. No, it is not so much the quantity that a person eats, but it's the consistency. If just because today there's a nice food, I eat a giant quantity and next day I eat because I don't like it very less. Then that sort of alternation is naturally something is will add to our taste, we may take a little more than usual. But if we are just alternating depending on the tastes, and then that is more of a lack of sense control. Some person on a regular basis, that person needs a more food. That's not necessarily lack of sense control. In the Vaishnava culture, we also have Raghunatha Goswami once in 3 days would take a little bit food. You know, take just some buttermilk, 2 or 3 days. And we have Bhima who could eat so much. And for Bhima, fasting was nearly impossible. And it is actually this whole Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi, we get it because of the kindness of Bhima. And it's not the kindness of Bhima, it is the giant appetite of Bhima. Bhima told Vyasadeva, who was like his grandfather, in a sense, directly actually, he was Pandu's father. So generally speaking, you know, because this was a particular system in the Vedic culture, that if a woman, the dynasty has to go on, and if a woman in the dynasty does not have a husband, then the brother-in-law can impregnate her. But when the brother-in-law impregnates her, actually that brother-in-law, the offspring that are born, are not considered to be the sons of that brother-in-law. They are considered to be her sons and they are considered to be descendants of the deceased husband. So if the brother-in-law is inseminating so that just the dynasty can go on, then it's not considered the brother-in-law is the father. So that's why in the Mahabharata, although it is Vyasadeva through whom Dhritarashtra and Pandu are born, Dhritarashtra and Pandu don't refer to Vyasadeva as father, nor do the Pandavas refer to him as grandfather, because that is a It is a contingent arrangement. It is a because of emergency that particular arrangement has been done, and there is the focus is not so much on in modern times. Which idea might seem controversial, right? But it is scandalous also. How can a brother-in-law inseminate his own brother's wife? But the point is that in our culture, the focus is too much on lust and sex. In the past, the lust and sex has always been a part of human culture. An important part, quite a significant part, but nowadays it is dominant, predominant in fact. And because of that, all relationships, we just can't, many people can't think of anything beyond the carnality of those relationships. But in the earlier culture, the dynasty was very important, and continuing the dynasty was also a very important function. So the focus in this thing is not on the immorality or the sensuality. That was just was a one-time contact with Vyasadeva and Ambika and Ambalika, and after that, there is no other contact at all. And Vyasadeva also does not, nobody considers him to be contaminated. Vyasadeva is still respected as a great sage, as the author of the Vedas, as the compiler, the person who put in written form of the Vedic literature. And the Ambika and Ambalika are not considered unchaste in any way. The point in this is the continuation of the dynasty. So although from the seminal point of view we could say that Vyasadeva is the grandfather of the Pandavas, but they never refer to him that way. They refer to him primarily as a great sage and they respect him accordingly. So Bhima tells Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva is telling, extolling the glories of Ekadashi. He says, how you must fast on Ekadashi. So Bhima says, it's impossible. He says, I can't fast. What to speak of fast a whole day? Even from one meal to the next meal, it is difficult for me. I feel so hungry. Imagine a lot of work also. So then he says, no, but you must fast. He says, then please arrange for, one Ekadashi. If I fast, I can fast once a year. Fast, then please arrange that I will get the benefit of all the Ekadashis. So then Vyasadeva says, yes. Vyasadeva has that potency. And then he says, this is a special Ekadashi. And if you fast on this particular Ekadashi, then by fasting on the one Ekadashi, you will get the benefit of fasting on all other days of the year, all other Ekadashis of the year. That is how the Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi has originated. So the point again is Bhima Karma Avrakodara. He used to be a giant eater. And Prabhupada elaborates on the names Rishikesha and Dhananjaya over here. So Krishna is the controller of the senses. What does it mean he is the controller? There are two levels of meaning to that. One, he is objectively always the controller, and the other is subjectively we accept him as a controller and then we voluntarily agree to be controlled by him. So objectively means right now I am speaking, so I think I am speaking and I have the power to speak. But suppose I develop a bad throat, then I'm still here, my throat is also here, but I will lose the power to speak. So objectively, it is the reality that my senses are not under my control. Although my senses are, I call them as mine, and although frequently I am able to control them, but at the same time, there are times when I am not able to control them. Sometimes people get paralysis. And then, when they get paralysis, they just cannot control any of their limbs. I mean, people get Parkinson's and diseases like that. So therefore, the point here is that we have limited powers. And even those powers can be taken away at any time. So Krishna is objectively speaking the controller. And based on our past karma, he gives us a certain level of control over our body and our senses. So now, our perfection is to recognize the objective reality and then subjectively accept Krishna as the controller. That means, Krishna, you are my master and my senses are yours. I am meant to be your servant. So please engage me in your service. Please accept me as your servant. So when we understand this and accept this principle, then we are moving towards spiritual reality. So that's how the definition of bhakti is Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Rachyate. Rishikena, with our senses, we serve the Lord of the senses. Then there is Panchajanya. There's a whole story in the Bhagavatam about how the demon Panchajanya and Krishna killed him. And then he was in the form of a conch. He had a conch with him, which is like his defining characteristic. And Krishna took that conch. Now this was just a historical narrative when Krishna appeared, how he got the conch. But actually, conch is his eternal associate, and it is paraphernalia. It's always there in the spiritual world with him. But when he appears in this world, there is a particular historical narrative by which his associate comes and meets him, and his paraphernalia becomes his. Now, Arjuna is called as Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya means one who gets dhana, one who has acquired dhana. So actually, when Yudhishthira Maharaj wanted to perform a big yajna, so he needed, yajnas are expensive affairs, he needed a lot of gold for it. So he went to the north and searched in the remote areas and found a lot of gold over there. And that's how he got the name Dhananjaya. And in the context of the Bhagavad Gita, we'll see that by through Krishna's instructions, he also got the dhana, the wealth of spiritual knowledge. That is also the ultimate wealth. So, let's look at the next verse. Now, after describing this, now the remaining kings are described. Remaining people who blow their conch shells. Ananta Vijayam Raja Kunti Putra Yudhishthira Nakulah Sardevascha Sughoshamani Pushpakam Kashyascha Parmeshvasah Shikhandi Cha Maharathah Rishtudyumno Viratascha Satyagischa Parajitah Drupado Drupadeyascha Sarvasha Prithivipate Saubhadrascha Mahabahu Shankham Dadmo Prithak Prithak. So, Ananta Vijayam Raja Kunti Putro Yudhishthira. So, it's interesting that on the Pandava side, first Krishna and Arjuna are described, then Bhima is described, and after that Yudhishthira is described. Although Yudhishthira is the king, from the point of view of significance on the battlefield, the most influential warriors, first of all was Krishna and Arjuna, the combination. Then the second most significant was Bhima, and then after that was Yudhishthira. And then Nakula, so his conch shell was Ananta Vijaya. And similarly, Nakula and Sahadeva had their conch shells, Sughosha and Manipushpakau. And then a whole list of this, Kashyascha Parmeshvasah. So, Kashi is described once again. He's a very famous archer. Shikhandi Cha Maharathah. Now, Shikhandi had been Amba in a previous life. And he had been destined to be the cause of the instrument of the death of Bhishma. Dushtadyumna Viratascha Satyakish Chaparajitaha. So, Dushtadyumna, as I mentioned yesterday, was a formidable warrior on the side of the Kauravas. And Virat is there, the king on whose palace the Pandavas served and whose kingdom they lived during Agyatvas. And Satyakish Chaparajitaha. So, this can be translated, it can be split in two ways, the Sandhi Vigraha, Sandhi is combination. It can be Cha Aparajitaha, that Satyaki also, who was Aparajitaha, or it can be Chapa Rajitaha. Chapa means bow, so one who is decorated with a bow. And then Drupado Drupadeyascha, all of them are Prithvipate Sarvashaha. They are all kings of the world. And Saubhadrascha Mahabahu. Then Saubhadrash, so here, Saubhadra is Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu is referred to specially because he is a formidable warrior. And they all blew their conch shells. Shankhan Dadmu Prithak Prithak. They all blew their conch shells. Now after they blew it, then let us see what happened. Saghoshodhartha Rashtranam Radhyani Vedarayat Nabhascha Prithivim Chaiva Tumulo Abhinunadayan. So, earlier also it was called, this guy was Tumula. There was, the sound was tumultuous. It was described here also in 19D, it is described the sound is Tumulo Abhinunadayan. And the tumult, Nabhascha Prithvim Jaiva, it extended all the way from the sky to the earth. So as it extended like this, all the way. So, but the important point here is Saghosho Dhartha Rashtranam. This ghosh, this proclamation, this sound, what is the effect of that on the Dhritarashtra, sons of Dhritarashtra? Hridayani Vidarayat. Their hearts were shattered. Why were the hearts shattered? Because the sheer volume of the conch sound, conch blowing, and the confidence that it conveyed, it shook and shattered the confidence of the Kauravas. So when the Lord was blowing the conch shell, and the associates, the devotees were blowing the conch shells, The combination of the Lord and the devotee are undefeatable. And that's why the Kauravas realized, we are in deep trouble. And they realized in what grave trouble they were. They immediately started feeling shaken. And that's how their heart was shattered. So actually speaking, these are all signs that the victory is actually going to be the Pandavas, not the Kauravas. Yet at the same time, the Bhagavad Gita illustrates how, although everything may be set for victory, at the least expected moment, things can go wrong. The Pandavas are prepared for victory, but let us see what happens now. And the prepared means they are prepared for battle, but they expected to win. Now, Prabhupada writes in the purport, one who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity. So, how does the devotee become free from fear? Actually, courage is not necessarily the absence of fear. It is the awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear. Courage comes not by the absence of fear. So, I have no fear. No. How, if we have fears, the fears, we cannot just wish them away. We may have fear of future, we may have fear of getting some terrible disease, we may have fear of some misunderstandings. So, the whole adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidevik, all of these can cause us fear. So, when we want to talk about courage, courage is not just the absence of fear. You know, a person who is having no fear, often that may be because of ignorance. You know, a drunken person may just drive, just run into traffic, and fearlessly. That is not fearlessness, that is stupidity, that is foolishness. So, now fear is not, fearlessness is based not on ignorance of the dangers around us. But actually, fearlessness of a devotee, so there can be fearlessness and ignorance, where one is so lost in one's own thoughts and one's own hallucinatory world, that one is not aware of the dangers. Then there is fearfulness because one is dependent so much on the material world. One wants to enjoy here and one feels fearful. Oh. How will I enjoy? What if this goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? What if that? There's so much anxiety that comes because of that. And then beyond that, there is a fearlessness which comes from knowledge. And I understand that actually I'm not the body and the soul. And Krishna exists and Krishna cares for me. So fearlessness comes by the awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear. A presence that dwarfs fear. That means when we understand that God is there. And in front of God, whatever be the causes of fear, whatever be the problems that are there, they are all insignificant as compared to God. By the awareness of a presence that dwarfs fear, then fear, courage comes. Dwarfs means to make it very small, like a dwarf. So normally if we are alone and we see some danger, we'll feel fearful. If I go on a dark street and we see that there is some dangerous looking giant person coming along. If this person coming to rock me, I will feel fearful. But then I just look behind and I see a even bigger bodied policeman there with a gun in his hand. Then I'll feel peaceful. What has happened is, it is not that particular thief is not there, thief is not a threat, but I know there's somebody bigger who can protect. So similarly, in our mind, there are so many fears that are lurking. And those fears, we can't wish them away. But if they are there, what we have to do is, we have to increase our Krishna consciousness. We have to become aware of a presence that dwarfs fear. And then the fear goes away. So, that's how we move forward in our spiritual life. So the Pandavas were not fearful because Krishna was with them. Whereas the Kauravas were fearful because God was not. They had no awareness of a presence that could dwarf fear. In fact, that presence was on their opposite side. Or rather, they had chosen the side opposite to the Supreme Lord. And that's why their inauspiciousness, their destruction was guaranteed. Now, till this word, actually the description is going on. Now, Arjuna starts some action. This is the first time Arjuna is doing something. Till now, in 14th verse, Arjuna entered. And now he starts acting. Atha vyavasthitan drishtva dhatarashtran kapidhvajaha pravritte shastra sampate dhanurudyamya pandavaha rishikesham tadavakyam idamaha mahipate. So atha vyavasthitan drishtva, vyavasthitan, when he is, as they are situated, they observed Dhartarashtra. So as the Dhartarashtra, the army of Dhritarashtra was arranged, he saw them. Who saw them? That person who was Kapi Dhvajaha. Dhvaja refers to flag. Kapi refers to monkey. So Kapi Dhvajaha means the person with a monkey flag. So actually, in the later on in the battle, it is said that when the Kauravas would look at Arjuna's chariot, they would feel as if that monkey standard, that monkey on the flag, that standard is actually real, and the monkey is screaming, and that monkey is causing terror into the heart of the enemies of Arjuna. But what is this? So, when the Kapi Dhvajaha, what does it actually mean? Actually, Arjuna always had a standard. Every warrior would have his own flag, by which other warriors would recognize him. So, different warriors had their distinctive flags. And Arjuna had a flag, it is called a standard. The standard was actually a monkey. Now, that had always been a standard. But for the Kurukshetra war, Hanuman, at the request of Bhima, had agreed to enter into that flag. So, Kapi Dhvajaha. That means, there was a monkey flag, and in that monkey flag, Hanuman had entered. That's why that monkey, which is supposed to be just a flag, now it seemed to be alive. And the Kauravas were horrified by seeing that. So, it's a long story. When the Pandavas were in the forest, at that time the Kauravas, at that time Arjuna had gone to heaven to get heavenly energy powers and heavenly weapons. So, he wanted mystic powers as well as the Astras from heaven. When he had gone at that time, Bhima decided to go up from Badrikashram upwards into the Himalayas more and more. And there he met a monkey who humbled him with the sheer strength of just his tail. Bhima was not able to lift up that tail itself. And we recognized as Hanuman. And Bhima requested him, you know, you are my older brother. Both of them are the sons of Vayu. So I offer my wishes and I request your blessings. He said, because you are present on the side of the force of Lord Ram, they are victorious. So we request that, I request that you also be present in the war that is going to take place. So Hanuman agreed and he said, I'll be present in the standard of Arjuna. So in this way, there was Arjuna's magnificent chariot, which is described earlier, Mahati Sandane Stitav. And that chariot had Kapi Dhvajaha, a flag of a monkey. And this is also a sign of victory, of auspiciousness. Pravritte Shastra Sampate. So, Shastra Sampate. They were all equipped with weapons. Dhanurudyamya Pandavaha. Dhanurudyamya. That means, Pandava, Arjuna had taken up his bow and he was ready to fight. So then what had happened? Rishikesham tada vakyam. At that time, he spoke to Rishikesh. What did he speak? Idam ah mahipate. So, mahipate. So, here mahipate refers to O King. So, this is Sanjay speaking to Dhritarashtra. He says, O King, this is what Rishikesh, the Pandava spoke. So, let us see what he spoke. Arjuna vacha senayor bhayor madhye ratham sthapayame achyuta Yavadetan nirikshaham yodhukaman avasthitan kairmaya sah yodhavyam asmin rana samudyame. So here, in this verse, we will see that there are 6 lines instead of 4 normally, from the English point of view. So we just don't have A, B, C, D, we have E and F also. So sometimes, the verses are split differently depending on the continuity of thought. So that's why sometimes in different renditions of the Bhagavad Gita, the verse numbering may be different. So here Srila Prabhupada is actually putting 2 verses together in a sense, or 1.5 verses as 1 verse, because there's a continuity of thought over there. And later on, we will see that another verse which will be actually 0.5 verse, which will be considered as 1 verse. We will see that when it happens in the 4th chapter also. So by that, the overall numbering of the verses remains 700. But in some cases, depending on the continuity of thought, some verse may be split partially. And that's how certain messages are preserved in their continuity. So Srila Prabhupada focuses more on continuity of meaning rather than technicality of division. And that's why we'll see six lines in this verse over here. So what is Arjuna telling? Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratham Sthapayame Achyuta. Achyuta, please place the ratha, the chariot, in between the two armies. And why? Yavaditan Nirikshaham. By which I will be able to see. Niriksha, I will be able to do observation. Yodukaman Avasthitan. That those who are situated here to fight, I will be able to see them. What exactly do I want to see? Kairmaya isha yodhavyam. Asmin rana samudyame. With whom do I have to fight? I want to see that. So now, this is an interesting question. Obviously, the Pandavas knew, even Arjuna, the central warrior, he also knew who were the people who were there on the opposite side. Before the war, the alliances were formed. And when the alliances were formed, both the parties had their own spies. And even the kings who joined each other the alliance, they did not have to keep their alliances in secret. So it's not that suddenly Arjuna was expecting, oh, some new warriors will be there. New alliances have been formed and some warriors we did not expect are there. The whole strategy had been planned. And it had been decided, this warrior will fight with primarily this warrior, this warrior will fight with this warrior, this warrior will fight with this warrior. So then, if that is the case, then what exactly does Arjuna want to see? He knows who are the warriors on the opposite side. And they have made plans also that how each of them will be countered. So what exactly does he want to see? Now for the Pandavas, it was extremely mortifying because they were going to fight against their own brothers. They never wanted such a war. And even Bhima, who throughout the forest exile had been breathing fire, finally, when the war became imminent and Krishna said, I will go as a peace messenger and I will try to avoid the war. So at that time, Bhima said, oh Krishna, try your best. If the war can be avoided, that will be good. So Krishna was surprised. Krishna said, oh Bhima, it is indeed true that when war approaches, even the courageous become cowardly. That's why even you are talking about peace. So Bhima said, I am not cowardly. He said, I am ready to fight. But why should there be unnecessary bloodshed? So Krishna said, then, yes, I will try my best. But I know that Duryodhana is obstinate and he is not going to listen to me. But still, I want, Krishna's intention was, I want the world to know that my devotees were not instigators of the war. They tried everything possible to avoid the war. But still, in spite of that, the war took place. Because they were left with no alternatives. So, the greatest extent of Krishna's compassion was that he said, Pandavas will be satisfied with 5 villages also. Just give them 5 villages. But Duryodhana obstinately replied, I'll not give enough land to pass even the tip of a needle through. Then Krishna said, then war is inevitable. So here the point is, the Pandavas, even when they were on the battlefield there, they did not really want the war. Of course, once the war started, it was a deadly conflict and it was a war till death. But still, they did not want it. So Arjuna wanted to see, how inimical are they? What is their mentality? So that was his idea. He knew who were there. Kairmaya sahyoddham. That means, who all have come to fight with me? What is their disposition? Now, how are they going to fight with me? So it was a difficult war to fight. He was trying to understand it. Now, Prabhupada's purport focuses largely on the word Achyuta. So what is the significance of the word Achyuta? Literally speaking, the word Achyuta means to fall. Achyuta means one who never falls. That Lord who never falls or fails. So one who never fails in keeping his promise. Sometimes the Lord may be asked to do something which is not actually befitting his position. Just like he is doing now. He is the Supreme Lord and he is meant to receive worship from everyone. But he has become the charioteer of his devotee. And has become a charioteer. Not only has he become a charioteer, he has also become a part of the non-fighting contingent in the battlefield. Charioteers don't fight. And for a Kshatriya to become a charioteer itself is in many ways denigrating. Later on, when Karna requests Shalya to be his charioteer, and Duryodhana is shocked. He says, Shalya is a formidable warrior. How can he be the charioteer? And he says, no. Actually, I need somebody who is equal to Krishna as a charioteer. And he asks for him. Then Duryodhana goes and asks Shalya. And he's furious. He says, I am a king. And if you want me to, if you feel that I have not fought my battle with Arjuna, you tell me who are all the enemies you want me to kill and I will kill them. Now this is such a dishonor for me to become a, for you to ask me to become a charioteer of anyone. For a king to become a charioteer is such a great dishonor. And worse than all, you are asking me to become a charioteer of a Sutaputra. You know, of a person who is not even a proper born Kshatriya king. He says, for such an insult, I should leave right now and go away. He was furious. So the point is that to take the position of charioteer is quite humiliating in many ways. In some ways it's like a big billionaire who has hundreds of cars and he has hundreds of chauffeurs for the cars, suddenly being told to become a chauffeur of some other millionaire. You feel irritated by that. Enraged and infuriated. So that was what Shala's reaction was. And here also, Krishna, why has he done so? Because of love. So there also Duryodhana is ever skillful diplomat. So Duryodhana says, oh no, no, actually my intention was not to denigrate you. My intention was to appreciate you. He said that the greatest of all warriors in the whole battlefield on all both sides is Keshava. And yet Keshava has taken up the position of charioteer. And actually, there may be many charioteers, but there is no charioteer who is equal to Keshava. The only person who can be equal to Keshava is you. And then in this way, he just turned the whole thing around. And then Karna got Shala as a charioteer. So the point is, still, becoming a charioteer is quite a low-down position. And why did Krishna accept it? Because Arjuna requested it. And the Lord never fails to keep his promise. And now, not only was that an extraordinary request, that become my charioteer, but now there's a bigger extraordinary request, that the war is about to start and saying, please take me in between. Charioteer can have hundreds of questions. What is the matter? Are you going to surrender? Are you going to try for a peace agreement? What about the, if the enemy starts shooting and you get slaughtered? And after the conches are blown, then it's all right for the enemies to start shooting. And then you can be butchered also, because you'll be defenseless all along between the two armies. So he could ask hundreds of questions. But when Krishna gets this request, Krishna follows that request, as we'll see. So he never fails in giving protection to his devotees. Then Arjuna continues his request. Why does he want to go there? Yotsamana navekshaham yete yatra samagatah dhartarashtrasya durbuddhe yuddhe priyachikirshavah yotsamanan avekshaham. Avekshe means to see. So I want to see those who have come to fight. Yate atra samagatah, those who are assembled over here. And is Dhatarashtrasya. Here it refers to sons of Dhatarashtra, but especially not just all the sons, it's one obstinate evil son, Durbuddher. That is Duryodhana. Yuddhe Priyachikirshavah, desiring his success. So who could it be? How could they be siding on the side of such a person who is so personification of religion, siding on his party in such large numbers? Getting ready to fight. Is it really true that all these people are fighting on his side? I want to see it. Avekshaham. So we'll see here, the word eyes are coming so much. Iksha. Avekshe means to see. That has the root iksha. And we'll see in the previous line, it was, what was it? Nirikshaham. So avekshe and nirikshe. So we had avekshe in 21c. So actually here what Srila Prabhupada has done is, rather than making one verse is 1.5, he has made 1.5 verses 2. That's why we have 21 and 22 over here. And then on the 23rd verse is this one. So we have got a reference to eyes twice. Now, there will be one more significant reference. And then we'll discuss what is the import of these references. So now the discussion is going on. So as I said, the Mahabharata is like a nested dialogue. Nested dialogue means the dialogue happening at multiple levels. So there is a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna which is about to start. Then there is a dialogue between Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, which is the second level. And beyond it, the whole Mahabharata is described as a conversation between Janmejaya, who was a descendant of the Pandava Vamsha, who was the son of Parikshit, and Vaishampayan Rishi. So Vaishampayan Rishi is narrating the full Mahabharata to Janmejaya. So now the narration is going backwards and it's saying that Sanjay is speaking. What does Sanjay say? He says to Yudhishthira. So now the camera was sort of, you can imagine the camera moving forward and back. The camera was on Kurukshetra, and what is happening in Kurukshetra is described. Now the camera is moved from Kurukshetra back to Hastinapur, and in Hastinapur what is being reported is being described. Sanjay Uvacha Evamukto Rishikesho Gudhakeshena Bharata Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Sthapayitva Rathottamam. So Evamukto Rishikesho, having been spoken to that Rishi, that Lord Rishikesh, Gudhakeshena Bharata. So there's how he is, Arjuna's name is Gudhakesh. So Gudhakesh has many meanings. One is that it is one who has conquered sleep. Gudhakesh. Another meaning of the word is Gudak Isha. So Guda is jaggery. And a special kind of jaggery is very delicious. So Ka is Brahma, Isha is Shiva. So Gudhakesh refers to that Lord who gives nectar. Nectar that is like jaggery, delicious jaggery, to Brahma and Shiva. So Brahma and Shiva are great controllers, but when they see how their controller, how their master has become controlled by love, he has become the obedient charioteer of his devotee Arjuna. Then seeing this extraordinary love of the Lord for his devotees, the Pandavas, even Brahmaji and Shivaji, they feel delighted. They feel touched. And that's why they start saying, oh, what is this? This is so wonderful. So they also feel as if they are getting a flow of nectar. Gudhakeshena Bharata. So, Senayor Ubhay Madhye Sthapayitva Rathottamam. So Arjuna is repeating the request which he had made in verse 21. Say, please establish the chariot between the two armies. So now what happens? Look at the next verse. Bhishma Drona Pramukhtaha Sarvesham Cha Mahikshitam Uvacha Partha Pashyaitan Samavetan Kuruniti. So now what happened? Krishna took the chariot in between the two armies. So these two armies are assembled. Krishna takes the chariot in between and then he takes the chariot in front of Bhishma and Drona. Bhishma Drona Pramukhtaha. So they are the chief of the Kaurava army. Sarvesham cha mahikshitam, and there are so many people who are his kings, lords, mahikshitam. And uvacha partha pashyaitan. So Krishna spoke, oh Partha, you wanted to see? Now see partha pashyaitan. See this. And what happens? Samavetan kuruniti. Just see how everybody is assembled over here for the sake of fighting. Vishwan Sarvesham Chamahikshitam. So in this way, the indication is given over here that everybody should be ready to fight. And everybody is actually ready to fight. So Arjuna, what do you exactly want to see? Vacha Partha Pashyaitan. Oh Partha, what is it exactly that you want to see? Actually speaking, the warriors are there and you have to fight with them. This is a time for action, not for just seeing. So Arjuna Krishna is surprised, but he is saying, Partha Pashya. Oh Partha, please see. This is what I wanted you to say. I have fulfilled your desire. So in this way, the point that is being made over here is that actually there is great power of illusion that comes through the eyes. And when this power of illusion comes through the eyes, then anyone and everyone can get bewildered. So now we will see how Arjuna will get bewildered just by seeing Vacha Partha Pashyaitan. So when he sees Pashya, then by that Pashya, he gets illusioned. So actually speaking, in this world, generally speaking, Maya comes through the eyes, Krishna comes through the ears. So of course, this is a very general statement. Sometimes Krishna can also come through the eyes when we take darshan of the deities. And Maya can also come through the ears when we hear gossip and blasphemy. But in a broad sense, what we see, pratyaksha, that has a lot of capacity to draw us into illusion. when we look at the things of this world and we say, oh, there's so much pleasure here. And I just have to get it. I just work hard, make some arrangement, and get the pleasure and I'll enjoy. So it appears the pleasure is readily available and we just have to do a little bit things and we'll get the pleasure. So that's one aspect of the illusion. The pleasure is so readily available, easily available. On the other hand, there's also the illusion that, oh, where is Krishna? Even if he's there somewhere far away, how is he going to make any bearing on my life? He's far away. So what happens is, through our eyes, we feel the pleasures as real and available, and we feel as if Krishna is remote and irrelevant. And that's how Pratyaksha Karma can drag us away from Krishna, and not only drag us away from Krishna, it can also further drag us deep into Maya. So you have to be very careful when you use Pratyaksha Karma. We cannot walk around in this world with our eyes closed. We obviously have to have our eyes open. But having our eyes open doesn't mean necessarily that we have to have our heads receptively receiving, our heads and hearts receptively receiving everything that comes over there. We have to have intelligence, we have to discriminate. Then we will be able to act safely. So the Bhagavad, this demonstrates how that even a person who is as exalted a devotee as Arjuna, even such a person who is also accompanied by the Supreme Lord Krishna, such a person can also be bewildered if the person over-relies on Pratyaksha. So when he over-relies on Pratyaksha, Krishna is there right next to him, but by Arjuna's over-reliance on Pratyaksha, he lets Pratyaksha confuse him about Shabda. So the Kshatriya's duty is to fight, that comes from the scriptures. But the Pratyaksha that Arjuna sees is so bewildering that he feels doubtful whether I should be doing my Shabda, my ordained duty or not. So we will see in the next class what happened after this. How Arjuna became bewildered and how Krishna removed that illusion. There is Shabda, so Pratyaksha causes illusion and Shabda takes a person out of illusion. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.